Today's Bible reading comes from Matthew's account of the crucifixion in chapter 27. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine to drink, mixed with gall, but after tasting it, he refused to drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two criminals were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left.
From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over all the land. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tomb after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, good morning. With so much ease of information at our fingertips, our nation seems to be increasingly skeptical of many things. Some of us have developed a full-blown case of cynicism. I don't know if you've noticed that in yourself or in those around you, and somebody is quite rightly so. I mean, I don't think any rational adult actually believes that Elvis is still alive and well somewhere. I don't think anybody really takes it as gospel that Harold Holt was taken by the Russians, or that fast food joints can have a healthy option for you. Bit of a misdemeanor there, isn't it? It's like, you know, not quite the fit. What you read everything in the advertiser or see on Today Tonight is actually 100% true. I know, call me a skeptic, I know, but there you go. A fair proportion of the time, we are justified in our cynicism of the things that we see around us. The truth is that we are increasingly becoming skeptical. Indeed, most of us are skeptical of the things that we're not easily able to prove. Things like what we can't see, what we can't touch, what we can't feel in a tactile sense. In the most part, we're skeptical of the things that we don't understand. Of course, this is increasingly are prevalent amongst us, and we are a byproduct of our environment, our culture, and those around us. Importantly, as 21st century rational humans, we like to think of ourselves and we like to believe of ourselves that we are indeed rational, that we are coherent, that we are balanced in the way we perceive life. But here's the thing. When it comes to believing what we can only understand, what we can only see, what we can only touch, we have a significant problem. For the simple truth is that in some strange twist of irony, we believe far more with our hearts, with our emotions, and with our inner feelings than we ever realize with our brain. There is a conflict in us as humans between what we know to be true and what we want to be true. If you stop and think about it, we seem to be walking paradoxes of cynicism and trustfulness. Let me prove my point. Electricity makes a world of difference to our life. And 150 years ago, it was unimaginable what we have now and what we take for granted. But I wouldn't know if electricity was in front of me for me to see it as distinguished from a glass of air. I can't tell you what's going on there. I can't see the electrons, the protons, the neutrons. So I don't have a hope of seeing an atom. I see what they do, but I couldn't tell you what it looks like. I can't see a radio wave. I can't see the signal that my DVD player through the HDMI cable sends into my TV. I can't see that, but I know the results. But let me just be a little bit more basic. You know, I can't see the copper pipe, rarely see the copper pipe that brings the cold and hot water into the house. And for that matter, I don't want to see the pipe that takes away the waste from the house either, let alone smell it every now and again when SA Water has to come and fix the mains out the front. But each of these things makes a great difference to my life, and I'm assuming to the quality of your life. I'm leading you on a little path here, and I'm hoping you're getting what I'm going on about. We do one thing, and we say something else. We think one thing, and we feel something else. There's a rational part of our existence that tries to shut down anything that can't be comprehended by us with our thoughts. But there's another side that takes so much more on board. It's like we want to believe, but we're not sure. We want to hope. Sort of. And it's like we live in this paradoxical irony. I don't know if that's a phrase, I just made it up. The truth is, we believe a lot of things, and we believe in a lot of things that we can't see, that we can't touch, that we can't feel. A lot of things. This weekend we have the broad Easter theme of victory. And victory fits well for Easter Sunday, doesn't it? But boy, it doesn't fit so well for Good Friday. And why is it called good anyway? I mean, didn't seem too good for Jesus, did it? It's a bit of another irony. I mean, we're talking about death. And most of us know this, there's nothing victorious in death. Maybe we might have heard some speech from a soldier about leading his troops into battle and glorious death and all those sorts of things. But I don't know about you, but for myself, I'm not so keen on a glorious death. I'd rather glorious life. Thank you. Nothing victorious in death. Now, there doesn't seem to be much victory in today, especially if we've listened to the scripture readings. Let me sum them up if you were thinking about the hot cross buns straight after this. Let me sum it up in three words and you know what happened to Jesus. Jesus gets it. End of story. That's what happens on Good Friday. So the night before, all his mates have deserted him. In fact, one of them trades him in, sells him out, betrays him, cheats on him, all those sorts of words, just for a pocket full of cash. Authorities treat him badly. Finally, they got him where they want him, and they're not going to let him go. And they're going to vent all their spleen on him for all those times he gazumped them. They hand it over to the Roman soldiers, who know full well how to treat recalcitrant civilians of a foreign nation. And they do their job well. He's hauled before a court, and there's no justice in that at all. There's no justice in the whole thing. On the way to be crucified, no one helps him. No one says, I will help you, Jesus. All those that followed him, all those thousands that he healed, all those that he fed, no one says, I'll help you, Jesus. I had to force a man to help him carry the cross on the way. He gets to the side of the cross. Torture is extreme. Shove nails through his hands, through his ankles. He's hung up there finally. Spear shoved in his side. He breathes his last, gives up his spirit, and he's dead. No victory in that, is there? Doesn't look too much like a victory to me. And we can tell by the reaction of the disciples and those who really loved Jesus, those who didn't turn against him at the end, they didn't think this was much of a victory either. Everything points towards a dismal failure. Everything tells us, if you finish reading at Matthew 27, everything tells us that this crucifixion event has sealed the fate of Jesus inextricably. And just to make sure, a whole pile of guys roll a big stone over the cave where they've shoved him in. Finished. Jesus is done for. But what everyone who is standing around the cross and the grave, what all those who were bereft, those who were left in grief for 3 days, struggling with the world turning, with their Lord, with their teacher gone, killed, what all those who didn't know was that there's more to this than what they could see, feel, or touch. God, even in the death of Jesus, was up to something. God was working in ways they couldn't understand. And this, my friends, is God's specialty. God does it all the time. In fact, we get to see God doing surprising things throughout the world, throughout the history of the world, and in the created order of the world. We see it all the time, but often we're so busy seeing our own things, we don't see what God is up to. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, I had the privilege to be part of a memorial service to plant a memorial oak tree for 32 World War I soldiers who didn't return. 32 men who didn't come back. And the oak tree that we had planted was obtained from the seed of the oak tree, memorial oak tree in North Terrace. And the tree was about 9 foot tall, you know, about 3 feet taller than me, and, or if you speak in metric, about 2.5 meters, and it was planted on Remembrance Day 2011. And it was done with great pageantry, a marching band down the street, and lots of people surrounding it and all that sort of stuff. And I tell you, boy, did it grow. And I love trees, so I looked at it all the time. It grew, and it really grew, planted in good soil, and it was lots of water on it, and all that summer and even into the next autumn, it grew beautifully. Big crop of rich green leaves. And then winter came and it lost all its leaves, as deciduous trees do, and it was a long winter that year. And at the end of winter, people were coming up to me and saying, Jonathan, there's a problem with our tree. That tree we planted in memory, it died. But we're going to plant another one. We need to plant another tree. We've got to fix this, because you can't have a dead memorial tree. You've got to have a live memorial tree. You know what? It wasn't dead. Didn't even think about dying. It was just getting ready to grow again as soon as the spring came out. And it was a little bit late, and it tricked everybody. And just between you and me, it tricked me too, because I had to go over it and break a little bit off and went, oh, it's still alive, that's okay. But all that time, all that winter, when everybody thought it was dead, when everybody thought it was gone, when everybody thought, oh man, where are we going to get another one of these? A special tree, where are we going to get another one? It was growing deeper into the soil. It was pulling resources out from deep within the earth, and it was getting ready to burst forth and grow. You know, God specializes in this sort of stuff. Where there is death, He brings life. Happens all the time around us. And it's God's constant theme in creation. We've got to see it all the time. It's easy for us to talk about butterflies, you know, in a little cocoon and that sort of stuff, but it's happening all around us, all over the time. In the death of Jesus, God has done something that looks to us like a failure, but really it is victory. We think that it's anything but victory, but God knows it's anything but defeat. We think it's anything but victory, but God knows it's anything but defeat. This is how God works. This is the economy of God. This is the profound truth that underpins the reality of the world. God specializes in working like this, and it shouldn't surprise us at all. Jesus acted like this. Jesus knew what was going on and went willingly to the cross. And maybe, you know, I thought about this during the week, you know, maybe that's why our heads and our hearts do different things. It's the voice of hope inside of us, calling from a deep place, calling from our deep end where God is communicating inside of us. That even in the darkest moments, even in our own personal darkness, hope glimmers. Hope lives. Maybe that's why we can rationalize with our head, but still silently believe. Maybe that's why we can believe, we can hang on to hope even when our head says no. You know, today is a horrific day to remember. It's awful. You know, if I'm honest with you, I don't like hearing that reading. I don't like hearing it. You know, my habit is to read one of the Gospels through in the mornings, and I just read the Gospels. And at the moment, I'm reading Luke over and over and over and again. I hate it when I come to that point where I realize Jesus did that for me. You know, it's horrific to think that He would give Himself up onto a cross that we could have life. And there's so much more to the event than what we could talk about. We could be talking for days and days and days, and we just wouldn't understand the breadth of God's love for us. But we just need to know it, that it is His love for us, that He proves how much we are valued, not worthless. We're beautiful children. And Jesus' death forges a bridge that we could never hope to contemplate. We can't even see the other side, let alone cross it. And through His death, we're now able to walk over it freely if we want to. And without a doubt today, Good Friday sends us the message in neon lights, in the boldest possible terms, that when we think everything is gone, when we think everything is done for, when everything is finished, when it's been signed off, we have the death certificate for it, that's not the way God looks at it. And there's more, so much more than what we ever realize. God doesn't see it that way. The good news for us, the great news for us, that if we too have some darkness in our life, some death in our life, some struggle area in our life, some decay in our life, something that drags us down and it feels like it's going to die, then this is exactly the point where Jesus comes to us and speaks life into our life and brings hope beyond what we can measure. And it won't take me much to point out for you where this is, because we've all got pain and brokenness in relationships. All of us got some health issue or some struggle of health or know someone struggling with health. All of us have got a burden that we're carrying that is decaying and dying, that the stone has been rolled over and we have no hope of changing it. But right here, on Good Friday, as we stand before the cross, as we stand before the cross of Jesus, this is where we find God's voice saying to us, I see what is really going on for you. I understand what is going on for you. I understand what this really needs. And if we come to Him in humbleness, if we come to Him in humility, His mercy extends beyond that which we can understand. And we receive the grace that comes to us from His death on our behalf. Let me put it this way. When we see things shut down, God has a different perspective. And if we want to, we can ask God to help us see it truly through the eyes of faith. You see, the cross of Jesus, the death of Jesus, was not a failure, not a dismal end to an honorable life, a perfect life, a sinless life. But it was God's plan to open us up to so much more, to help us live in the freedom He bought. Freedom for you, freedom for me. In this is where we find victory. Thanks be to God. Amen.